most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
We've made it to hour number four of Sports Talk. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams, and we look forward to catching up with Vol for Life R.A. Dickey a little bit later this hour. But right now, with a golden attaboy up for grabs, it is time for our trivia challenge, the Sports Fix at 6. Jimmy, what is tonight's question?
John, in honor of having R.A. Dickey join us a little bit later, we've come up with a trivia question related to the former star pitcher at the University of Tennessee. When R.A. Dickey was a Vol, he went 3-0 against two SEC teams. Name them. R.A. Dickey went 3-0 against two SEC teams when he was Tennessee's pitcher. Name those two SEC teams.
656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Let's start with Jeff. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Here's one. These are just two schools in the SEC. I'm going to say Georgia and Auburn.
Wow. Well, you started strong. You're half right.
Help Jeff, we sure do.
Thanks, fellas.
All right. We sure do appreciate it. Thank you very much. Who was our next caller? Let's go to Kathleen. Hi, Kathleen. How are you?
Good. How are you, sir?
Doing well. Thank you.
Well, I'm going to go with Mississippi State and Vanderbilt.
No, it's neither one.
Neither one. Well, thank you.
We sure do appreciate it, Kathleen. Have a great night. We very much appreciate your listening and calling. Let's go next to Tony. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Tony.
Hello.
Hi.
South Carolina and Florida.
Well, we got one of them, right? You started strong. So we've actually had the two schools mentioned, just not at the same time.
Hey, Tony, we sure do appreciate it. Thank you very much. Repeat the question, Jimmy, if you would.
R.A. Dickey, as a pitcher at Tennessee, went 3-0 against two SEC teams. Name those two SEC teams.
656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Can't wait to catch up with R.A. as just now past the 25th anniversary when the Volunteers punched their ticket and went to the College World Series. It was something that was building. Todd Helton's freshman year, they hosted a regional, did not factor in the regional final. Then in Todd's sophomore season, which was RA's freshman year, they made it to the regional final before Arizona State advanced to the College World Series with just an unbelievable showdown in the end. And then 95 was, of course, Tennessee clearing that last hurdle as it was Todd's final year at Tennessee, R.A.'s second season with the Volunteers. And they were back-to-back SEC champs, 94 and 95. It's Paul who joins us next. Hi, Paul. How are you?
Hey, guys. I'm great. I'm going to guess Florida and Georgia.
You're half right. You finished strong.
Paul, okay, we sure do appreciate it. Thank you very much. Let's go next to Dave. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Dave.
Hi there.
Hi.
How are y'all? I believe the answer is Georgia and South Carolina, correct?
There you go. Yes, sir. I don't know if you heard him narrow it down, but that's exactly right. It is Georgia and South Carolina. Those are the two SEC teams against whom R.A. Dickey went 3-0.
Way to go, Dave. That's we can fantastic. Tell you that. But, he also had three wins against Kentucky, but they got Tennessee in an SEC East Division tournament game because that's how it was, I guess, in 94, 95, and 96. you didn't play an SEC tournament. You had a division tournament. So the West teams played at a location. The East teams played at a location. And you just played a six-team regional. But Kentucky, that's the RA had three wins against the Wildcats, but they got him in the postseason. But congratulations, Dave. You are our winner. You, of course, now have a fantastic, under-your-belt, unbelievable golden attaboy, and we invite you now to hang on and enjoy your audio reward.
I am the smartest man alive!
I'm a winner.
As chairman of the welcoming committee, it is my privilege to extend a laurel and hearty handshake.
Yes!
That's how winning is done.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what. Got money on my mind, I can never get enough. And every time I step up in the building, everybody's hands go up.
Yahoo!
And they stay there. And they say yeah. And they stay there. Cause all I do is win, win, win. And if you're going in, put your hands in the air. Make them stay there.
Dave's got his hands in the air as the winner with tonight's trivia challenge and the Sports Fix at 6, and we will have another challenging trivia question for you tomorrow. But we sure do appreciate everyone that called in with their guess, and again, celebrate Dave as the winner of tonight's Sports Fix at 6. We'll get a break. When we return, we look forward to catching up with Vol for Life, R.A. Dickey. That's next on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
To take the latest on Tennessee sports coverage with you anywhere you go, download the Sports Radio WNML app. Powered by Big Kahuna Wings, the wings that changed it all.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson, and we hope to connect here in mere moments with Vol for Life, R.A. Dickey. And so we are hoping to connect with him. Oh, and we are now pleased to be joined on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline by the VFL, former Cy Young Award winner, former Gold Glove winner, R.A. Dickey. R.A., how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much, John. How are you, man?
Oh, doing quite well. Sure hope that everybody in your household and beyond are safe and sound with all that's going on.
Yeah, you know, we're up here on a hill, and we've got, like, some acreage, so we've been able to spread out the last 2 or 3 months, and it's been okay, but it sure has been hard, you know, not going to school. I got a senior girl that's lost her senior year, so there's a lot of sadness for that, and, of course, a lot of people are sick, too, so it's been weird times, John, that's for sure.
That is for sure. And one of the things that I've very much appreciated is as you have broadened your outreach throughout your time at the tail end of your career with Toronto and with the Mets, was your reach with the Bombay India Challenge. And I know that you wanted to open the world to your kids, to allow them to experience, see different situations, different cultures, and goodness gracious, I just hate to hear and feel bad for all of the seniors that have lost what is such a special year of their life when it comes to their final go-round in high school.
Yeah, you know, it's been a challenge. I'm sure it's a challenge for everybody there in Knoxville, too. It's you know, this doesn't play favorites, right? I mean, everybody in some way has been impacted by what's been going on, and some, you know, might not ever remember it. Let's hope that they don't if they're little kids. But, you know, I got a junior and a senior, a seventh grader and a fifth grader, and we've had a lot of great talks around the dinner table at night about, you know, the challenges of what this world can present and how to try to figure out to maintain positivity and how do we use our God-given gifts to impact other people and the greater story that's going on around us. So it's, you know, it's not without its bonuses too. We've been able to spend the most time together as a family that we ever have in the history of, you know, our time together. So that's been a bonus.
It is hard to believe, but we had the 25th anniversary of Tennessee clearing the last hurdle, getting back to the College World Series with that 95 team that you were such a big part of. It was back-to-back SEC championships for Tennessee your first 2 years with the Volunteers, and you had just an unbelievable effort to get the Volunteers, help the Vols across the finish line to get that regional championship game against Oklahoma State. R.A., what do you remember most about being able to finally knock down that last door and help Tennessee get to Omaha with that big win over the Cowboys?
You know, that's one of my – you know, I've been really blessed, John, you know, to be able to play in the Olympic Games. And, you know, I've been to two playoffs in Major League Baseball and all that. Won a Cy Young. But I've got to say, that night, that day, that afternoon, that ranks as one of the top three memories that I'll ever have in baseball. And a lot of it was just because we got to share it with the community of fans and in a university that had just suffered through so much. We you know, the year before, we lost to Arizona State 3-1 in the, I think it was the 10th inning or something like that, 2-1 or 3-2, some 4-3, I can't remember. So we had been waiting for a long time, and just the satisfaction that came with knowing that we had, you know, finally done it after committing so much time and effort into it and getting to share it with so many people. That was one of the best memories I'll ever have, going to my grave, man. That was really fantastic.
R.A., it was the first time Tennessee had been to the World Series in 44 years. Did that resonate with you?
You know, I don't know if I really thought of it in terms of how long, like the dry spell, because, you know, when you're in the moment, you just don't. And, of course, you hear, hey, you know, that was when the last time we went and this and that. And there's so many schools that have never been that are great schools. So you don't really think about that in the moment. All I thought about was, this has got to be our year. I mean, we had Todd as a junior that year, and it was just such a good team. And we felt like we had the best pitching staff in the country the year before that, my freshman year. But when we were my sophomore year, we knew that it probably that was our window. And so that was it was special to do it because Todd was there, and just it was a really sweet time to be involved, that's for sure.
Would you say that that was a team that was absolutely brimming with confidence because you had had success, but you also had a lot of great players on that team?
I think so. Yeah, I think you got to be, you know, you got to know your identity. And I think every one of us knew coming off the year before and even what was built before I ever got there. You know, they went to a regional the year before I got there when I was a senior in high school. So you could start to see the momentum was building. It's just, what did we need to put us over that hump? And I really think that what it took was just a Herculean effort by a number of different guys. You know, a lot of guys in that tournament were asked, and that year, for that matter, were asked to do more than they had ever done. And every one of them stepped up to the plate. Forgive the metaphor there, but, I mean, every one of them came through.
It was really something to watch the season unfold the way it did. You start out with a regular roster that's filled with guys, but slowly but surely, there were guys that fell to the wayside for one reason or another. If I remember correctly, it was about 19 guys total that were on that trip to the College World Series. What was it like to see the numbers dwindle and realize, as you were just talking about, how at some point in time, you needed everyone available to step up because there just weren't that many guys available at the end?
Oh, my gosh, there wasn't. And not only that, you know, I think any great championship team, John, even at the major league level, you get contributions in big ways from guys that you're not necessarily depending upon. Like, everybody knew Todd was going to be Todd, and hopefully I was going to be me. And, you know, but Ryan Myers and John Alkire and Bryce Christensen, and I mean, all these guys that stepped up in a way that not that they hadn't done before, but certainly not on the stage that they had done before. And that was what was so incredible about our team, was that you had all these guys who just played huge roles. And you didn't really necessarily at the beginning of the season say, okay, that guy's going to be able to do what he did at the end of the year when you look back on it in reflection.
What was it like to see the first matchup between Tennessee and Oklahoma State in that Knoxville regional take place? It was a wild affair. Scott Schreffel starts on the mound, and Tennessee gets off to a great start, but then Oklahoma State rallies. Schreffel goes to center field, and lo and behold, it turns into a slugfest. Schreffel comes back to the mound, punches out their big bat, and Tal Light, I believe, is who it was. And obviously, Coach Ward not very happy at all about what he said was kind of a sandlot move.
Oh, man. Well, at that point, I don't care if it's Little League, sandlot, whatever it takes at that point, man. It was all hands on deck. I thought it was a great move. It certainly proved to be a good move.
So true.
Schreffel really came up big during that tournament, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, man. You know, nobody really realized what kind of pitcher he was going to become. Right, like nobody really counted on him to be a guy, and he ended up being a guy. Him and Ryan both. You know, you knew Todd was going to be Todd, and we were able to use Todd because of those other two guys outside of a couple of games in the role that he enjoyed the most and that we needed him in the most, and that was to close games. And it was because of the efforts and contributions of those other two guys and other guys. Man, there was other guys in the middle of the week, and we had John. Do you remember our record that year? I mean, it had to be almost over 50 wins, maybe.
Yeah, 54 and 16. But I've got the numbers right in front of me, so it's not my great memory.
Yeah. Well, so 54 and 16. It takes a village, man. When you're winning that many games. So we had, like, I remember Travis Exum and John Darlington and just so many others that contributed that you really didn't. You didn't know what you were going to get at the beginning of the year, but we grew. I think what was cool about that team and that experience and something I think I'll always remember about it was that we grew into what we became. You know, it wasn't like we were there from start to finish. I think we really – in fact, I think we got swept maybe early on in the season by Clemson maybe. I can't remember, but it didn't start off great, and we really grew into a good team.
All right, John and I have had this discussion before, but do you think if Todd Helton – had tried to get major league batters out coming, well, not out of the bullpen, but off of first base. Do you think he could have gotten major league batters out as a pitcher?
There's not a question in my mind he could have gotten big league hitters out. I just don't think his arm would have held up over time. You know, like he was always he was tougher than nails, of course. But you know, there would be moments when he would need a blow. You know, like because his arm was bothering him or whatnot, and the demands of a major league pitcher, you know, are really, really high. And coming off first base in the middle of a game, I don't know if that would be too wise for a guy that can hit like that in the major league. But I tell you what, if you wanted to bring him in out of the bullpen, that guy could get anybody in the major leagues out with what he has.
Yeah. Talk a little bit also about as the team, the program was building success, did you see it become easier for Tennessee to recruit elite baseball players?
Well, yes, I did. I saw so many good players roll through that cafeteria in Gibbs Hall when they were coming on their official visits. Now, they may not have ended up with us because they were the guys that ended up going the top five rounds of the MLB draft. I mean, we were attracting players that we had never been able to attract before. I remember sitting at the dinner table with somebody and, you know, a little senior comes sitting beside me, A.J. Przinski. Right, like types of players that were coming. He was going to come to UT, but he ended up going to play MLB instead. So those are the types of players that we were starting to get, and that was just a testament to that era of baseball that the fans were able to enjoy that kind of, you know, that 91 to 96 kind of run that we had. And then beyond that, I mean, they won another World. I mean, they went to the World Series again, John, in what year? 01?
Yes.
Was that – '01, yeah.
Yeah,
so, I mean,
in
that
05.
Was a good, that was a good stretch for UT baseball, man. That's a great decade.
And speaking of arms holding up, you opened the regional with 8 innings in a victory for Tennessee against the Citadel, and then you came back and you worked all 11 in the championship game against Oklahoma State. What was it like to get the ball to start the regional for Tennessee and then get that opportunity to kind of have it in your control when you got the ball against the Cowboys in that second matchup?
Well, I went into the Citadel game and I knew that, you know, the ask, because I remember the year before, the ask is going to be, hey, we need you to start on Friday and then we need you to start on Monday. I mean, that's a 2 days rest, right? So if you could keep your pitch count down to a minimum, then you'd feel good about it. But unfortunately, I think I struggled in the middle innings and ended up needing to pitch that eighth inning when ordinarily I'd have been out of there after 100 pitches or so. But I bet I went probably 120 in that first game. And then on 2 days rest, I could turn around and have to go that many. Was it difficult, man? But you're in such a zone because you know that this is it. You win here, you're going. And so, you know, you sacrifice a lot for moments like that. And you just hope they don't come back and bite you.
And and as you talked about Todd Helton and his ability, I think that was one of the more amazing storylines for me that season is when Rod asked him to start a game as opposed to coming out of the bullpen. He made four starts, had four complete games, and won all four, including what was his last outing as a starter to start the College World Series against Clemson in Omaha. What was it like to see Todd go from the bullpen to joining that weekend rotation with you?
Well, you know, we knew that we were probably going to have to do that if we got beyond the College World Series. That was going to be something that had to happen, and everybody knew he was going to be able to do it. You just never dreamed that it would be with such crispness. I mean, he was dynamite that night. I'll never forget it. And it's the stuff of legend, really. I mean, I tell a lot of my little league players about, you know, playing with Ty Helton and how he pitched a complete game in the College World Series after he hadn't started a game in weeks. So it was, you know, he's just one of those legendary characters that comes out of the Big Orange, you know, farm system there. I mean, it's fun to tell stories about that guy.
All right, what was it like when you were asked to come out of the bullpen?
Well, that was an experiment that was, you know, in retrospect, I wish that we would have not done that. I understood why we did it now, you know, and then I understood. I mean, we needed somebody that could close out games because we just didn't have anybody. And so the thought was that I'd be able to come in, you know, two innings for three straight nights instead of just being able to pitch one game and impact that many more games. But the problem is we ran into a string of weeks there. We weren't really getting to the seventh inning with a lead. And so I was sitting over there and not pitching for a long time. What seemingly was a long time for me because I was used to pitching every other day. But, you know, I got it. You know, I ended up going back into the rotation in the middle of the season and it was fine. But, you know, we didn't have enough starting arms to be able to do what we wanted to do and keep me in the pen, I think. I think that was the struggle.
Was there much of a difference in your mindset being a starter versus a reliever?
Yeah, there was. I mean, you didn't have to save anything, really. You know, the first few innings of a baseball game as a starter, you're really just trying to see what your body's going to give you that day. And you kind of grow into the outing. You know, how does your breaking ball feel? How does your sinker feel? You know, but as a guy in the pen, you come out with your hair on fire and you know that you're going to be a fastball and one other pitch kind of guy. You need a fastball and a put-away pitch. And that's really all you have to get ready for that inning or those two innings. There was a point there, though, that I was a closer and I was being brought in the sixth inning of games, which is a tough close, you know, from the sixth to the ninth. But it was, I just loved the pitch and they knew that. And they were looking for ways for me to get in the game any way I could.
Do you, who are some of your teammates, you can go Tennessee or in the pros, that you are still connected with? Who do you still catch up with?
Oh, man. You know, when I think it was just last year that my son played Scott Schreffel's son and Scott Vieira's son in some kind of tournament. You know, it's just incredible. Randy Burdett, who was a longtime ball coach there, is a really, really dear friend of mine still. We still talk quite often. So, you know, Mike Anderson came through after I left. He was a high school teammate of mine. I mean, there's just been so many opportunities for us to see each other over the years. I mean, you may not call them every week, but there's a bond there that exists between members of that team that will never go away just because of what we shared.
What is it like to be doing some coaching, as you mentioned?
Well, you know, it's different, man. Like the sports world, the youth sports world, you know, can be somewhat toxic and from time to time if you don't watch out. You know, there's a lot of adults that are trying to live vicariously through their children, and you see that from the other side of the field, and you want to go over there and say, hey, it's a game, and games are meant to be fun, and baseball is meant to be fun, and there's a lot of pressure put on 9 and 10 year olds these days, you know. But at the same time, I feel like God has really given me the gift of a lot of experience and a lot of wisdom from other people, and I love giving what I have. I love giving what I've got, what God has given me to give away, and that's fun for me. And I knew as soon as I retired, John, that I wanted to be with my family and my son, and this is just another opportunity for me to get to spend time with him. And that's why I'm in youth sports in general. You know, if Eli becomes a Major League Baseball player, great. But I just want to practice loving on him well and teaching him what I've known, and that's all I'm in it for, really.
That is awesome. And I know you've had the opportunity. You do such a good job of connecting with people. But to be able to be a part of some shows and to do some appearances, what does it mean to you when you hear from somebody? I showed you what it meant to Tyler Ivins on our own staff.
Yeah.
To have him get his jersey, his R.A. Dickey jersey signed by you. But what is it like to be able to see what perhaps following you, being a fan of yours, has meant to them, and whether it be watching you compete or just enjoying you and your characteristics?
Well, I appreciate that, John. That's a real encouragement. I think that there's a real responsibility. You know, I take it very seriously, simply because I was a fan too, you know, and I looked up to guys too. And, you know, I tell everybody I come in contact with or that I speak to a team or a organization that, you know, nobody in this world is perfect, but we certainly all have gifts that we're meant to give away. And, you know, my hope and all that is just that, you know, I continue to get opportunities to brighten somebody's day or to give away a jersey or a signed ball or whatever. I mean, that's nothing, you know. And so it's been fun to be able to do that and to have a platform to kind of bounce off of, to be able to contribute in that way. Those are always the experiences in my past that have meant the most to me, is when somebody that I looked up to identified with me in a way that was transforming. And it might have been a few words, or it might have been a speech at a basketball camp, or it might have been a big leaguer stopping, or a Nashville Sound who was in the bullpen, tossed me a ball and say, hey, keep your front side closed when you pitch. Or, you know, you never know who you're going to impact. And so that's kind of fun, you know, to think of it in those terms.
That is awesome. And last one, short and sweet. Did they get it right with the final installment of Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker?
Oh, man. Well, I don't know. I'm gonna make a lot of people mad if I start talking about Star Wars. But I tell you what, you can't make a bad. It's hard to make a bad Star Wars. That's how far gone I am. You know, like even Episode One with Jar Jar Binks, and people think that was the worst one ever, I could probably watch it 5 times in a row and be happy. You know, that's kind of, I'm just that deep gone. So you shouldn't ask me. They're all great to me. You know.
Well, that's the single greatest bobblehead I've seen, you and the Stormtrooper look with the Atlanta Braves. But, R.A., always great to catch up. Thank you so much for sharing your memories on what it was to be a part of Tennessee clearing that last hurdle, getting to the College World Series in 95. Hope we can do so much sooner rather than later. But take care, stay well, and be safe.
Anytime, John. Appreciate the time. Talk to
you right.
Later.
Thank you so much. Vol for Life, R.A. Dickey, joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. We'll get a break and be back with more as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
The voices in our head may not be real, but they're loud and have some good ideas. This is 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900. Just amazing, Jimmy, to hear R.A.'s memories. And my goodness, it sounds like he remembers it like it was yesterday.
Yeah, and for that to be, well, and when he called it one of the top three memories of his career, and he's had an incredible career, that tells you how meaningful it was for him.
Oh, to be a part of it, and they had been so close. They had lost in the championship game to Arizona State the year before, and so there was just everything that kind of set the stage. And as Brent Hubbs was sharing his memories of that season, you know, Tennessee, after winning that opening SEC series, dropped their next two weekends, and it was that trip to Lexington, which, shocker, it was not cold. I mean, it was cold and not so pleasant when the Vols went up there, but they took all three against the Wildcats and didn't lose another SEC series the rest of the season.
Well, it was a magical year for Tennessee, certainly.
It sure was.
John, a few other news and notes. We mentioned JT Daniels committing to Georgia. He is now the 16th five-star player on that Georgia roster right now. Also, Brown has eliminated 11 sports. They've eliminated men's and women's golf, 9 other sports, and they had fielded 38 sports for 900 students. One thing that was an issue was, of the last decade, they'd only won 2.8% of the Ivy League championships. Only Stanford and Harvard had actually fielded more sports than Brown. Brown dumping 11 sports, including their men's and women's golf programs. Also, the Boston Marathon has been canceled. It's the first time in 124 years. They were hoping to run it in September. They have scratched that idea. And the NFL rule that Bill Belichick took advantage of and then had it taken advantage of by the Tennessee Titans coach Mike Vrabel, where they were taking penalties to run the clock. They are no longer going to allow that. That is an NFL overturn, not a surprise. We figured that would be the case after watching that. And then Notre Dame and Kentucky in basketball, they've agreed to a 3-year deal. They'll first play at Kentucky in December. And Major League Baseball draft, John, you're right, June 10 to 11. June 10 to 11 is when the draft is going to be. A former Lady Vol player, Shalon Pillow, has been hired as the head coach at Florida A&M. She is the second Lady Vol in the last, 5 or 6 weeks to get a head coaching job that I know of, with Nikki McCray Pinson going to Mississippi State. So, but congratulations to Shalon Pillow. And also, a couple of other notes. Mike Singletary, how about this? Here's a guy that used to be the head coach of the San Francisco 49ers. He resigned recently as a coach at Trinity Christian in the Dallas area after going 1-21. He just went 0-11. He was 1-10 the year before. It makes you wonder. I guess some guys are cut out to be great linebackers and some guys are not cut out to be coaches, but just an awful record on his behalf.
Goodness.
And just kind of hard to figure. At Arizona State, basketball coach Bob Hurley, he criticized his athletic director, Ray Anderson, for, quote, disturbing actions, close quote, in the handling of booster harassment allegations. Hurley said that Anderson showed, quote, no sensitivity toward women. Now, this was somehow obtained by Yahoo Sports. Hurley's wife was one of three women who had been harassed. So they got these documents of Hurley criticizing his AD, and then Hurley came out and said, well, I actually have a good relationship with Anderson, and Anderson said that the allegations were false and baseless. So an interesting situation when Hurley's got some documents to get released criticizing his AD, and then he comes back and said, hey, I got a good relationship, and then the AD trying to cover his tracks. I don't know exactly what the boosters did and what all those allegations were, but for Hurley's wife to be one of the three, obviously that led him to make those negative comments. And then the governor of New York, Governor Cuomo, said that this was interesting. In New York, they're going to implement this. No mask, no entry for businesses that are reopening. No mask, no entry. So businesses are told that they have to do that. That's an interesting edict that comes from the governor. I guess the positive sign is they're opening businesses. But people still need to be conscious of social distancing and wearing masks and just being smart so we don't have a whole lot of other issues that crop up. But I thought that was interesting coming out of New York in regard to what Cuomo said. And then I thought this was interesting. Tim Kelly has taken over the play calling duties for the Houston Texans. He'll take over for Bill O'Brien. We'll see how he does in that regard. And also, I was listening to a discussion I thought was pretty interesting. One coach has a lot of pressure this year to succeed, and there's several of them, and I'm thinking maybe at Tampa Bay with Bruce Arians. Oh, Mike McCarthy. Because so many people look at that Dallas roster, even though they went 8-8, and they see a lot of talent on offense and on defense. Mike McCarthy was hired to come in and win at a high level, and obviously the blame went, and I think it's pretty accurate, went to Jason Garrett. Now McCarthy's taken over, so if Garrett was the culprit, the scapegoat, the reason that the Cowboys weren't playing that well, that means McCarthy needs to win, right? So I think it's interesting, and right away, I mean, nobody has patience anymore. I think it'll be curious, but I do think there's a little bit of heat on McCarthy to get Dallas turned around and get him turned around rather quickly.
Of course, you also have that huge contract negotiation that is ongoing, and we'll see whether or not they can get that ironed out. I do think that Dak Prescott is deserving of a new deal. I think he's earned it to be the Cowboys quarterback now and in the future. But my goodness, when you hear some of the numbers being thrown about, and we know that not all reported salary demands are indeed accurate, kind of like Wikipedia, grain of salt. I just think that, yeah, there is that potential. And as we've talked about, Jimmy, with some of the projections, it's amazing to see how quickly the Cowboys factor into possibly representing the NFC in the Super Bowl when it comes to odds makers, despite being a team that was simply 500 last year.
Yeah, they were a team that lost every one possession game. They were 0-5, and does that have to do with coaching? Very well could. Maybe Prescott didn't come through at times when he could have. I think he is a really good NFL quarterback. I don't think he's elite, but I think he's really good, and he put up very good numbers last year. I think he's got the ability to lead Dallas well into the playoffs. He's got one playoff win in 4 years. I think it's right. Yeah, 4 years. Now, he'll play it. He'll play there either under the franchise tag or under a long contract. And I know people look at this differently. Look, to me, he doesn't deserve the money of Patrick Mahomes or Russell Wilson, but a lot of it has to do with timing. When is your contract up, and when can you go sign this huge deal? Dallas's big mistake, I thought, and it's been mentioned by others, they should have done this deal with Dak Prescott before last year. Get it done. The demand for the amount of money he would want wouldn't be as high. He wouldn't be coming off a career year in terms of yards passing. And so now he's wanting a mega contract, when if they had taken care of that a year ago, I don't think they would have this issue. But and I think some are right that they kind of did this backwards. They should have got the quarterback done, then do the running back, then do the receiver, and then do others. Instead, they seem like they got everybody else done except their quarterback.
And you're right, it would have been much easier, but I also think they were kind of waiting to see whether or not they should take their hand off that particular checker before saying, yes, that's indeed the quarterback that we want to give a big deal to, because they had, what, seemingly half the team bus was up for a big-time deal. But yeah, we'll get a break and be back with a final segment to today's edition of Sports Talk with Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. This is 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Because we have a transmitter and you don't. 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Final segment to today's edition of Sports Talk. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Himes. To get a question or comment in, under the wire, 656-9900, 656-9900.
Doing a congratulate again, Buck Jones, who's been selected for special recognition by the Greater Knoxville Sports Hall of Fame. That banquet is coming up July the 21st. It'll be televised. What a great guy. Buck Jones has been around a long time with track and field. He's an honorary Tennessee Letterman. He also has been given the Track and Field Lifetime Achievement Award. He helped with the Tennessee Sports Management Program, and he's been on the Knoxville Golf Open Committee for many, many years. So that's Buck Jones. Congratulations to him. Also, John, I thought it was interesting. So Damon Lillard, he's I don't know if I'd say changed his tune much. He said he didn't want to play if he didn't think Portland had a legitimate chance to be in the playoffs. Then he said that a play-in tournament is perfect, so that would be okay with him. Then I read where there was one potential proposal that the NBA would have a play-in game, play-in only for teams in the Western Conference, because they were kind of jumbled up and there was a lot of debate about who might be able to advance. That doesn't quite seem fair to me to say, okay, Western Conference, we're having a play-in, but in the East, we're not. That doesn't make sense to me.
Doesn't make sense at all. I don't see how you could come up with it. It's one thing to have a DH in the American League and not have it in the National League, because pitchers have never hit in the National League. DHs have never been a part of the National League, so you can see why that has remained the way it has. There's absolutely no reason to have a different setup as to how you could potentially nail down or qualify for a postseason spot for one half of your league compared to the other half. I think that would set off, rightly so, a player revolt.
I also thought this was interesting. The NBA is going to allow international players to return to the United States. They got an order, apparently, from our government that will allow that. So that is in lieu of the U.S. restrictions in other countries. So international players able to come back. I'm sure they'll be quarantined for 14 days before they are able to go out and start practicing with their respective team. So we will see how that works out. Also, Jadeveon Clowney has balked at a Cleveland offer that was said to be very aggressive. He wanted $20 million. Seattle said no thanks. Then he dropped it down to $17 million. You got Cleveland that's in the picture. You got Philadelphia. You got the Titans. You got Seattle also still in play. I don't think he's going to get the money he wants. Now, some have argued that, well, once he goes through the physical, he's going to get paid. He doesn't put up numbers to suggest you should pay him $20 million or $17 million. He's a good defensive player. He had, was it three sacks last year? Wasn't many. Mm-hmm. And yet he's demanding this a very high amount of money that would go to the elite defenders, the elite pass rushers in the league. John, I don't think he's going to get what he wants, but by balking at the Cleveland offer, it made me wonder if he just didn't want to play at Cleveland.
Yeah, I think that's where I would go in terms of reaction to it. I think it might just be hesitation on his part, that not so sure that he wants to join that particular organization, and who knows, maybe it is something that he feels that the offer could have been insulting. But as Will Wade would say, as I understand it, Cleveland made a pretty strong offer, if you know what I'm saying. But it might not have been the strong offer that Clowney was looking for. Who knows, maybe he's kind of like going through the recruiting process again, where he's got his top three and he's hoping that he gets a better deal or a perhaps bonus structured deal with one of the teams that he would really like to join.
Well, speaking of the Browns, the quarterback Baker Mayfield said basically it's time to work instead of talk. Yes, I would agree with that. Although a number of other folks are saying, no, we like Baker Mayfield talking and yapping and saying a bunch of stuff. He hadn't backed it up. So I kind of like the more humble Baker Mayfield. He did invite 9 teammates to a recent workout, showing some leadership there. And I do think Cleveland has the ability. There is no reason for that offense not to be really good. Now, I'll say this, though, a little bit in defense of Baker Mayfield and probably in defense of the head coach. I thought the Browns did a disservice to the entire offense by naming Freddie Kitchens the head coach. He had not had much experience. He was in over his head. And even though they had surrounded Mayfield with some good receivers, both LSU products, good running backs, and then they go out, now this year they got this tight end from Atlanta, there is no reason this offense should be really good. They just need somebody to orchestrate it, to do a good job with play calling, and that answer was not Freddie Kitchens. So I think it'd be a mistake to completely write Cleveland off because they bombed last year. I think the personnel is there for them to have a really good offense and actually a pretty good overall team, John.
I think there is that potential, and I think you saw at times what people were perhaps pointing to. It was silly to project Cleveland to be not only a division contender but also a Super Bowl contender, because mm-hmm. the previous season I think they had a win against a team with a winning record, that being the Ravens. And they beat the Ravens again, to their credit, this past season. They were one of two that managed to do that. But I think that with some of the craziness now to the side, expectations might be a little more reserved, but I do think that they have solid personnel, and if Mayfield can relax and find his footing as a starting quarterback, I think there is a chance for the Browns to take a big step forward. Hey, Jimmy, a lot of fun today, and I know we're going to have more fun tomorrow.
I look forward to it. We've got a great guest list.
That's right. So that'll be tomorrow on Friday on Sports Talk.